time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
I don't want to grow up. I want things to stay the way they are.
Can't stop time, Wendy. Whether you like it or not.
Did it?
I don't think that's a bug.
She is a fairy.
Are you Peter Pan?
Were you expecting someone else?
I can fly! Is that
Neverland? Is this everything you dreamed of?
I could never have dreamed of this! What is this place?
No rules, no schools, no bedtimes, and most of all,
no growing up.
Are you Wendy?
Tiger Lily.
Peter.
Peter! Peter!
Captain, it's Peter Pan.
Never say his name.
Me?
Just like old times.
All your times are old, Captain.
Con!
Everyone, hang on!
Did you hear that?
That is one big... To grow up. Biggest adventure of all.
Well, I suppose it was a fairy tale after a fashion, and maybe if you can actually listen to your inner Tinkerbell, then all will work out well for the world, especially as Jude Law effectively just grew up. I don't know, I've always seen Sarah Huntley in many ways as the Wendy darling of our times, basically. She kind of keeps folk in order. She actually believes people can fly. And of course, she thinks happy thoughts, don't you, Sarah?
Oh, think wonderful thoughts, yes.
Yeah. And as I say, the incarnation of Peter Pan and Wendy is interesting. I think it's pleasant. I think it's amusing. I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10 overall. It's not a classic by any stretch of the imagination. Probably, if you're looking for an updated version, I would have preferred Steven Spielberg's Robin Williams number Hook, which this tends to channel in certain areas. But at the same time, we'll just have to wait and see what Natasha Wanton, whom we can congratulate, Sarah, because Natasha has just passed her driving test. Hurrah!
Brilliant!
There we are, huge routines.
Does congratulations. That mean...
Yeah. And which side of the road do you drive on in the Antipodes then, Natasha?
It's the same as the UK. It's one of the few places in the world that actually drives in the same place as the UK. So it's all good.
So there we are. You just clearly won't have any challenges with respect to American lines and such like. But all good stuff there. So Richard Fitzwilliams may actually put in a surprise appearance. We don't know. I've sent him the details. He said he might like to talk about the whole thing. So I said, fine. I think there was some kind of event happening in London, I believe, recently, which seemed to gather some sort of press coverage. Not greatly in Europe, but I believe we now actually formally have King Charles III ensconced in his base. Yeah, and that's all we need to know about the whole thing, really. It happened, it took place, and thankfully went off relatively peacefully with a few minor Republican supporters who effectively chanted, "Not my king," and were instantly arrested and carted off, not to the Tower, but to some other place of the world. So there we are. It's par for the course. If they can, let's face it, if they can do it in China, why can't they do it in Britain as well? It's pure democracy.
I feel like that's kind of got more international coverage at the minute than the actual coronation has, or maybe it's been sort of getting a lot more coverage here, which is interesting. I suppose that's kind of what they were intending, to garner that sort of attention. But yeah, it's interesting which different countries the media's kind of picked up on what.
Well, nevertheless, an interesting aspect of our history and our historical times. I won't say we'll never see its like again. But I would have to say, my general observation, surely, for goodness sake, somebody needs to tell Louis to stop pulling those crazy faces. If he actually gets known as Prince Crazy Face, it's not going to actually help in any way, shape or form with respect to respect for the monarchy across the country in any way. And I'm just saying, you know, there comes a time where, you know, the time to actually pull crazy faces needs to actually be stepped to one side. And there we have it. Anyway, enough of such banter and general joy and joie de vivre. Cathy Manso, were you actively involved and engaged with this scenario, which has yet to see a president of the United States actually attend since the whole 1776 debacle actually took place? So Joe Biden very much following in the footsteps there of Dwight D. Eisenhower, who also had other things on his plate back in 1953. When effectively Queen Elizabeth II received her coronation. Did you follow it, or was it just a case of how wonderful to see Jill Biden dressed in the colours of the Ukrainian flag?
I did see some of it. You know, it's kind of hard to ignore. You know, not in this country, guys. it is involved. But it was so, I mean, for me, it was odd because I felt like I was watching like in HD, something that happened in the 1700s. that's what it, I was like, this is so lifelike, even though it's very much today, modernly happening. But definitely a historical moment, for sure.
Yeah, let's face it, if it's not in full HD, it probably doesn't even exist on this particular side of things. Just out of interest, Kathy, have you managed to catch Peter Pan and Wendy as yet?
No, I have not been able to catch them. I'm so sorry.
Sarah, because obviously the fairy dust is there. It causes problems. Sarah Huntley, Peter Pan and Wendy, have you sort of managed to access this as yet?
No. It's a bit of a stressful old time for me. I literally haven't had a day off till yesterday, but I will. But like you, I think some of the other stories in the films that have been made around Peter Pan, I'm a bit of a traditionist. I love the story of Peter Pan, so I don't like it being mucked about too much. But I did like the one, I think it was Maggie Smith that was in, about Mrs. Darling. I can't remember which lady it was. I think that was good, and some of the other sequels. But I perhaps it's just my age.
Of course,
I don't like when people muck about with the story too much, because I was noticing at the Palladium this year, actually, they've got Peter Pan. And then underneath the billing of who's on, they've got so-and-so is something the, you know, pirate something or other. And I think, oh, who's playing Peter Pan? Tinkerbell, of course, is non-binary. You know, and I'm not saying anything against that, but if you looked at the characters they're highlighting, it's not necessarily Peter Pan, because I didn't know who Peter Pan was. Don't know. Oh, I think I did say who Mr. Darling was. But why do people have to muck around? I can understand, what's it called when you all talk about it, when it goes forward or it's something that was set parallel to it? That's fine.
Alternate realities.
Yes. But I think when they actually change the story, it's wrong.
And let's face it, Sarah, you know of which you speak because you have been Peter Pan in pantomime, I believe.
Oh, well, I was in Lulu was Peter Pan with George Cole, it was that production. And in fact, I was playing a character I didn't really know about, which is Jane, which is in the book, which is Wendy's daughter that goes back, and a kangaroo and a spare Indian. That's what I was. But I had to have the symbols taken out of my tambourine because I couldn't keep in. When they got to Never Never Land, there was a dance. And like you, in this production, you were either an actor, a singer or a dancer. Hopefully I was an actor, but I wasn't a singer and I definitely wasn't a dancer. But because of the casting, I made friends with the guy, which was a very good move, who was the head of the orchestra, the conductor. And He knew it was me, and when Tiger Lily comes in, all the Indians go like this. And for people listening, because I can see you lot, it's head, shoulders, knee, bang, head, shoulders, knee. And I went, somebody seems to be out of time here. And I knew it was me. One of those things where, like, do you stand forward? And they're like, I don't know. Who is this person? Goodness me. There's about 20 of us. And then at a coffee break, he went, Sarah, I know it's you. Oh, I know, I'm so sorry. He said, I've got an idea. So they took all the little symbols out of the tambourine. So I could still go, but it didn't make a noise. And that was the solution. But yes, so that was a very traditional Peter Pan. And yeah, I approve of traditional Peter Pan. Sorry, that's
and,
it.
And of course, who should have been appearing recently at the New Theatre Royal Lincoln in an evening with other than Lulu herself? So there we are. Just goes to show all roads leads to Lincoln, England. In the end, notice Natasha how I managed to successfully fill that whole branch of the program, which was meant to be Natasha Wanton's review of Peter Pan and Wendy. Because of your driving test success, we felt it was only right that we could actually do that side of things there. So deep inhalation of breath, steady the ships, sort the range of other factors for us, and prepare to deal with a tale about animal vivisection and the high evolutionary, and indeed the whole wonderment of the fact that Star-Lord will return, because he will, Peter Quill will return, with or without Gamora, but Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is out there. Natasha Wanton, would you like to deliver your epic-making verdict on whether this has gone down the rabbit hole of Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania? Is it as high as you would say Thor Love and Thunder was not in your particular experience? Or is it the end of Phase 4, Phase 5 of the Marvel Universe as we actually have the end of trilogies for Guardians of the Galaxy and, of course, Ant-Man and Wasp? Natasha, over to you.
Yes, so this is the 32nd Marvel film. Guys, we're actually here. It's been a long way. It's been a long journey. And unfortunately, recently, it's been a very bumpy road, which led me to go into this with a great amount of trepidation. As Alex mentioned, some of the above, I've not really been enjoying the Marvel experience recently. It's sort of had a number of issues, but I will get to those in a second. In terms of this movie, I'll start with a little bit of a review. I'll try not to give too much away because I don't want to give any spoilers. But it's pretty much, I think it's pretty fair to establish that this is Rocket's story. I think that wouldn't be giving too much away saying that. We basically see the Guardians having established a headquarters. They've got their own sort of planet. They've got nowhere. Late one night, they're attacked by fans of the comics will be excited by Adam Warlock. And he's been sent to kidnap Rocket Raccoon. Unfortunately, in the skirmish, Rocket is very badly injured, and they are unable to help him due to a coding that he has in his system that people were not previously aware of. He hasn't opened up about his past before. Cue them going on a quest to unravel his past. And as they unravel his past, they look for a code in order to be able to, you know, bypass these mechanisms so that they can help him. At the point of starting this movie, Gamora is not with the team. It is basically made up of the originals, plus obviously Nebula, and they sort of form the bulk. It's quite nice of this movie that it's not Peter Quill being the main focus character. I'm not a massive Chris Pratt fan, and I find that when he's on screen, he tends to hog it a bit. So it was quite nice that other characters were also being fleshed out and developed quite a lot. Where I think that this Marvel film succeeded, where others previously have not hit the mark, is what I feel is they balanced the comedy element of Marvel films that we've all come to know really well with the more serious elements of this film. As Alex sort of hinted to at the start, I will give a heads up, there are scenes of experiments on animals within this film, and some viewers might find that distressing. So I'm just giving you a heads up. It is in there. It's not particularly a nice topic, but it's there. I do feel though that it even with those moments that were, it was still very beautiful and emotional moments. There were still also the comedy element of that, but it was done in a way, unlike Love and Thunder, it was done in a way that seemed to work with the plot rather than against it. And it actually made sense. It was like meaningful in the moment. It wasn't just quick, let's chuck in a joke because it's sad now. As ever, visuals were amazing. The music, you come to expect the music to be banging in a Guardians film. They updated the playlist a little bit. You could see there was some noughties and sort of 90s stuff in there, not just some of the old school stuff. Overall, I really, really love this movie. It's got a lot of heart. I really enjoyed getting to know Rocket more as a character, but also the fleshing out of the other characters. I cried twice, which is always a good sign in a movie. It just really moved me in a way that I wasn't expecting this movie to. I was expecting it to be an absolute trash heap, I'm not gonna lie. So I think maybe that's why it moved me more than I thought it was going to. I'm going there, Alex. I'm going 10.
We were gone for quite a while, but no matter what happens next, the galaxy still needs its guardians.
Hello, we come in peace.
Come on, Drax. Seriously, dude?
No, dude, no, no! Ow! Hey!
Don't forget. Where we came from.
We have been running our whole lives.
Pete, I'm done running. Fly away together. One last time. Into the forever. That beautiful sky.
Anyone.
Kill a few people.
Kill no people.
Kill one guy, one stupid guy who no one loves.
Now you're just making it sad.
Well, interesting result for the full 10 for Natasha. Sarah Huntley, have you seen any of the 32 Marvel movies that have been, or 31, prior to this one? Or is it a case of, no, I've studiously avoided all of them because my heart is always with DC?
Oh, I wish it wasn't always with DC. No, I haven't. In fact, I've had quite a stressful moment with science fiction type style things last week, which I had to go to a reading and read through a new mini series, which was Olympus. And the writer had made up so many different names or sort of crossbreed between old Greek Olympus and modern. And then what my agent didn't tell me till like the day before is, please, Sarah, can you read in the narration from page 1 to 53. It was probably the most scary thing I ever had to do, guys, because there's 60 people around the table with the writer and it being recorded for Netflix, not for Netflix, but see if Netflix will sort of take it up. And the woman starting off said, now, some of these names are very difficult to say. But they didn't tell me how to say them. I just sort of thought, oh, it's now or never. So it started, and I thought, just keep a rhythm going. But the terrible thing about it was, you three, was it kept going. It was really awful to do. It was things like interior, space such and such. And then I was okay with Thebes and different strange names like that because you've got used to that. But I called somebody syphilis instead of something or other, but I just kept going.
There's syphilis, which of course is a social disease, and there's Sisyphus, who of course was supposed to be pushing the rock upwards, upwards. Basically.
But the worst one was, really, I did about 10 minutes of this, and it was literally interior, blah, 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 D. And because I'd skim read it, I went for 10 minutes and I thought, I just need to get off, but no, keep going. It wasn't even time to have a sip of water because the problem was, everybody, the actors had like one line. All they had to work on was like, so, do you suppose this is true? And then X, you know, off it goes again. And I wasn't sure how much to put in between their interlinking bit because obviously it had to work listening rather than visually, it was such a visual thing. And then the man next to me was really kind and he said, oh God, I'm doing from page 53 to 100. He was stressing himself too. And we knew we were breaking that. But the terrible thing to say was because I'd skim read it thinking of names, I hadn't then seen, and I kept thinking, just put the stress on, interior, brothel. I didn't realize it was a brothel scene. I won't begin to explain how scientifically based that was. And I could hear him. You know when somebody starts to laugh but can't? I could just hear him like this. I was beside myself. Anyway, I needed a strong drink by the time I got to page 53. But all I will say, Natasha, is in answer to you, with science fiction and that sort of style of movie, it so has to be visual, doesn't it? Because otherwise, it doesn't make any sense at all, actually. It was just me talking for 53 pages. But I actually, when I listen to it back, and so that's why I perhaps will come and go and see this Marvel thing. I'm not a great sci-fi person, but some of my students are doing scenes from Star Wars, and that went down very well at the showcase. So perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps I should relook at it all. Sorry to share that with you, but it was unbelievably stressful at not making a complete idiot of yourself. I don't think I did, but it was a now or never moment. Awful, absolutely awful. Anyway, we'll go and have a look.
And proves that you have the empathy to share that, obviously, with Queen Camilla and indeed the Princess of Wales, because I'm sure exactly the same thoughts were going through their mind in the recent coronation scenario.
Didn't you all think yesterday, that's what I'm always intrigued by people's nerve levels, because I help people such a lot, and I'm quite an anxious person myself. But I think when it's something as big as the coronation, I mean, what about the little boy that started it off? Fantastic. But I almost think it, when the nerves get to such a pitch 5-10 minutes before you actually do something, I don't know whether you're like this, Alex, because Alex always has a calm voice, but there becomes a point where you cease to be worried. It's actually when nerves take over at a point when you don't think they will, I think. And so I thought, from a nervous point, I mean, imagine if you mocked up on one of those songs or things, imagine it yesterday. What must have been they must have had a calm mantra going through, breathe, carry on, it will be there. And the other thing that I was really, sorry, I'm going on, I must shut up. The other thing I was really intrigued of from a production performance point of view was the guy that was setting off the parades, and he was responsible for the whole thing for that, thinking, crumbs, he must be thinking when he got up, if he didn't probably even go to bed last night, this is it. But also, did you notice the gaps in the service where there was just quiet while some of the priests yesterday were taking their time finding bits of paper? And there was one moment where I could see him shuffling through his papers and I was going, oh no, don't say you're not going to the next bit, please. I just get so stressed for people because it was like, there was one year, the last night of the proms, where the person singing Land of Hope and Glory forgot the words. Do you remember that? It was horrific. I mean, it's the sort of thing that can kill you. So I thought everybody did incredibly well, but I think the prize should go to that little boy that said that first line to start it off.
And not Prince Harry, who did so well in the fourth row from the back. Still, never mind. As indeed did Prince Andrew. Nice to see them both in there. So at least they had a sort of token presence as far as the whole thing was concerned. Back in the day, of course, George III, Queen Anne wasn't even allowed into the presentation. She tried to gain four different entrances. And in the end, they just shut the door in her face. So, well, you know, there are issues.
I know we haven't got Fitzwilliam's Richard with us, but the other kind of comic moments were, I think because I'm a bit stressed myself at the moment, I thought, gosh, it's quite somber. So it was good to see Prince Charles smile when he put the crown on and was kissed by his son. That was a warm moment. But also the other thing that was making me anxious was those robes that everybody was wearing were almost comic. I don't know about the rest of you. And you could see that we're desperately trying to pick them up not to trip over. And it also hunched people quite a lot. And I just felt the red, white and blue was almost like a stage costume that people had on. It was quite bright, wasn't it? Too bright. But that Camilla's crown was very large, wasn't it? Incredibly large.
Well, they had to account for all that hair. But anyway, let's move on to Kathy Manso, because we might as well get your views on Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and Sarah's epoch rendering of her own views of the coronation and coping with nerves before, as he uttered the words.
I'm getting it off my chest, did they say.
it's only right. Kathy, what about Guardians of the Galaxy 3, the true monarchy of the royal family of the high evolutionary system?
Can you imagine? I've always been a huge Guardians of the Galaxy fan. Their soundtrack is one of my favorites that's kind of come out of it. And I do understand the hesitation with Chris Pratt, though, as Natasha said.
Kathy, he was in Parks and Recreation.
That's exactly what I mean. My love for him comes from Parks and Rec, but that's when he was a normal human, you know? He had a dad body, he had a little stomach, like, he was just cracking jokes, which, who doesn't like? And then all of a sudden, he got super ripped for the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, which I understand. You got to do what you got to do. I get it, but
it's like Richard Fitzwilliams prepping for a royal commentary. He goes into the gym nonstop, 6 hours a day,
yep,
for at least 3 weeks beforehand, working on those abs and pecs.
Deadlifting.
I think that, if I may interrupt, was Penny Mordaunt, Alex.
She held that sword with true wonderment. I'm amazed that Sarah didn't actually give the best award to the Prime Minister that we never actually had, Penny Mordaunt. So there you go.
Goodness me.
Meanwhile, back with yourself, Kathy.
Oh, sorry. didn't mean to go off the tangent. No, I do want to see this third film, but I'm getting tired of the sequels, guys. How do we feel? There's like this is the third. I mean, I'm sure this is a great film, like Natasha said, but
10 out of 10 she gave it.
She gave it 10 out of 10, which I'm going to go watch it for sure. There's no doubt. If it's a 10 out of 10, happy to. But in general, I think I'm not as motivated to go see sequels anymore, and I just kind of have to wait for it to show up on a
like coronations
sort of platform.
You get one every 70-odd years. Why would we actually bother? Right. Please, for goodness sakes.
Man, I turned on my cable TV for the first time in like 6 months. You know, I live life by streaming. So yesterday when it was coronation time, I was like, oh, right, I got to actually go to the real television.
Natasha, any other sort of advice on Guardians of the Galaxy 3 before Richard takes over and suggests the kind of high spots for him for the event that actually saw, as we saw, Penny Mordaunt hold her sword with vim and vigor?
No, it would just be really interesting to see which characters return alongside Peter. I would like to give I didn't mention it in my review earlier, but I would like to give a massive shout out to Will Poulter, who played Adam Warlock. I thought that he's always brilliant. He's always such a phenomenal actor, but I think he was really, really good in this movie. He plays the role really well. So I think I really appreciated his work. In answer to Kathy, yeah, I think that's a problem that a lot of people are having. And I think that's probably why we're going down the sort of quality level that we're going, because we're sort of not knowing what to do with these endless sort of sequels. And I would agree that the last ones that I've seen have just been really, really terrible. But I'm really pleased to report that this one is actually a sequel worth watching. It is actually offered something a bit different. So I liked it.
Well, we know that Richard is a keen Rocket Raccoon fan. Richard, have you actually decided to, after yesterday, or after the coronation, depending on when you're listening to this, you've decided to finally join Republic, and you will actually be actively engaging now with the Not My King protests and other such stuff? Or is it a case of, what the hey, we'll give him a few more years?
Well, Alex, the way you as it were, managed to get into the inner workings of my mind these days. It's so impressive, you know. I mean, so far as Republic's concerned, I've done quite a few debates with them over the years, and several in the last week. And I mean, frankly, there is no major political party that supports our Republic. When I was debating...
The SNP does. Their leader has actually said within 5 years Scotland will have its own elected head of state.
No. I don't think you find it's SNP policy. I think there
but
are...
Their leader, Hamza Youssef...
Yes, he's a Republican. Nicola Sturgeon was a Republican. Alex Salmond was more ambivalent. Now he's more of a Republican. But I would suggest to you that SNP policy on the monarchy is still a question mark. What they don't want to do, and you can understand why, is alienate a certain section who might conceivably vote for them. So this is a question mark. It isn't, I mean, so far as England's concerned, as I say, no major political party, and also Northern Ireland, yes, but with Sinn Féin. But here's a point. I mean, when you actually talk about changing a constitution, you're doing so in a country, even if it's unwritten, which ours is, where for the last 110 years, they haven't even been able to find a way of reforming the second chamber, much less anything else. The House of Lords is still there, however unrepresentative and undemocratic in a weird sort of way it works some of the time. The 92 hereditary peers still there. The only actual agreed change was Tony Blair in the 1990s, I think. And it's so clearly against all polls. Republic's main scores 26%. They used to be below 20%. Yeah, they went briefly above.
With young people, Richard, under 25s, less interest in the monarchy than ever before.
And the 18 to 24 age group is one of the challenges of Charles's reign. And absolutely so. But I mean, you can see why. And that was Harry and Meghan putting the boot in Oprah, in the Netflix docuseries, in Spare, in all those interviews. You can see why it's happened and it could swing back. The monarchy reinvents itself. It's quite extraordinary. So far as I am concerned, I mean, yesterday it was, despite weather that was terrible. I mean, I was doing a Sky News Australia broadcast, Natasha, the day before. And suddenly, from being very nice and sunny, the heavens opened and there was a ferocious downpour, I think, yesterday.
It's an omen, Richard. It's an omen.
Oh, Alex, such is a good omen. I'm sure this was the gods raining on the Not My King parade before it started. No. I think that it was fantastic. I think it was far more contemporary and diverse. I think that also you had the religious aspect of it. In the secular age, it's sometimes quite hard to come to terms with that sort of thing. And it's perfectly obvious. The reason Justin Welby, who isn't perhaps the most adept feature character when it comes to putting crowns on, I would add. I've just been watching some of it again. It's quite interesting when you watch him put the crown on King Charles, and he's extremely nervous and he juggles it around a lot. And as for Queen...
The Archbishop of Canterbury for Queen Victoria almost broke her finger because he jammed it on the wrong one by mistake.
No, absolutely. I mean, in fact, previous coronations have had disasters.
Edward VII, he had to cancel it because he had appendicitis.
Well, I know that, Alex, because my grandfather was among the South African contingent at the coronation. And in fact, they had a fabulous time waiting for the king to get well because hostesses gave all sorts of parties for them and all the rest of it. It really was quite intriguing. Yes, I think the ritual I thought worked. It's an hour shorter than 1953. I've just seen the BBC 3-hour version of it. And if anyone wants to see 1953, which is an absolutely glorious snapshot of an era.
When we had an empire.
Oh, it was an imperial
era. When Queen Tonga was actually there in full force.
The Queen of Tonga was absolutely superb because she refused to close her carriage for the rain, and her poor neighbour, the Sultan of Kelantan, got soaked too. But she didn't mind, and she waved to the crowds and stole the show. It was terrific.
And it wasn't in HD, Kathy, so you wouldn't have enjoyed 1953's version.
I have to say, But of the touching moments, I mean, clearly in something as spectacular as that, and something, it was like a medieval tableau come alive. It was absolutely fascinating, anthropologically too, to see what they wore, to see who sat where and so on. I was trying to make out whether Prince Harry was singing the national anthem, but I couldn't see because of Princess Anne's hat. Perhaps that was intended, I don't know. But certainly when William gave homage to King Charles and gave him a kiss, if you actually see not what you saw on the television, but you saw the bits I commented on in the Mail where you had the photographs, you really do see affection in his expression and a pride in what finally had happened to the longest serving Prince of Wales in history.
So there's no truth in the rumour that actually William said, I bet you're glad I'm not Harry then, to King Charles.
Well, I think if Harry behaved in a way, I use the word behaved because, I mean, they've conducted a guerrilla warfare in the monarchy, he might
He's
have...
just as bad as Louis pulling faces, that's all I can say.
Well, so far as the Sussexes are concerned, there's nonsense about them overshadowing anything. I mean, Harry was, as I've been saying, an extra, really, without much to do, but he had
supporting to be. Artist.
Yeah, but it wasn't just the fact that, you know, there was a feeling, it was his father. But of course they get their Spotify, Netflix and Random House would not be pleased if they discovered that Harry wasn't there. In fact, the Sussexes had bunked because of the whole coronation. We can't mention it without just commenting on the fact 90 heads of state, 203 countries represented.
Yes, but no Vladimir Putin or Joe Biden. And President Xi just sent around his henchman to the whole thing. So I'm not sure what that says about China's head of state. But as we said in the opening, at least they can actually deal with their dissidents more effectively. Perhaps we can learn from them.
Well, I wasn't obviously at or near the protest. It certainly is an unfortunate piece of publicity that we've heard subsequently, but I shall no doubt hear more of it later when I or if I debate Republicans. But the point is, there aren't many of them. And frankly, they are clutching at straws always with the Queen's reign, as long as it was the moment that they would sort of emerge was when King Charles, who isn't young, nor is Queen Camilla, so that is
oldest monarch ever crowned, basically.
Oh, yes, true, and probably, I don't know about the oldest ever, but certainly in Britain. But William and Catherine and their children, they're the future of the monarchy, and I thought, you know, that they handled it spectacularly. The weather was terrible. There was a splendid military parade and also the balcony appearance. Oh, the balcony appearance was choreographed rather unfortunately because it had been the coronation and because Charles and Camilla had been crowned with the pages of honour by them, the other royals were rather bunched up in the corners of the balcony. But I don't think that, you know, it's one of these things. I mean, it looked fabulous, I think, throughout the country, and I hope today and tomorrow there'll be lots of celebrations. There's the concert tonight. Incidentally, Katy Perry looked fabulous, absolutely exquisite in pink. So she was my favourite for the best dressed.
Strange. I thought you would have gone for the chap from the repair shop, actually, but perhaps not.
Well, how about if you want someone who looked like a bag lady, Theresa May, former Prime Minister, turning up looking awful. She and Therese Coffey were absolute grotesques, in my opinion.
Well, there we are, Richard. I'm sure they speak very highly of your good self in the Coffey and May households as they listen to this particular routine. I presume you've got hold of the copy, the rush-released copy of the whole event and ceremony that has now been produced in record time, was in the stores online 6 o'clock yesterday.
Well, I'm still watching the BBC one and I wasn't able to get out it yesterday. I didn't know such a copy existed. I was still broadcasting.
Well, there you go. Clearly, we've gone back to the full fairy tale scenario that we had. Of course, fairy tales do come to an end. People do grow up. And I'm sure that England will in the end eventually grow up into a republic, which it probably was always meant to be. But it's just a bit behind the rest of the world in terms of that. Natasha, are you good for Wendy or Peter Pan and Wendy next week?
Yes, I will. I will have no driving test to distract me, Alex.
Natasha passed her driving test. Very important to ensure that that can be carried through. And indeed, we also found out that Australia also, according to Americans, drive on the wrong side of the road. So there we are. That's another important thing.
Which American told you that?
Well, it's just known fact. I gather Natasha, as I said, no, the road is the same. The Lance Arm is on the same as in Britain and probably will remain so. Sarah, you've got past page 53 as opposed to the pages. You've acted in the true Sisyphean way of pushing a boulder up the hill backwards, the Sisyphean task of having to
that
work through
that.
That's
what it was like. Nightmare.
And it could open up a whole new range of things. Natasha, would you be looking forward to the Marvels, the next movie in, of course, Phase 5, following your huge endorsement of Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
Yeah, I will. I'm not a big Brie Larson fan, so but I really love the Miss Marvel series, and I'm really excited to see how she develops her character in the upcoming movie.
Well, Brie Larson doesn't really like the fans either, so kind of there's a mutual feeling on that side of things, by all accounts, from the whole thing. She should have stayed in that room back in the day. Stayed in the room. Never mind. That's another line for another debate. And Richard, will you be checking out Guardians of the Galaxy 3, or indeed Peter Pan and Wendy?
When I have time to consider my thoughts, Alex, I will make that decision.
There we are. 10 out of 10 from Natasha Wanton. And we know you like Rocket Raccoon. Sadly, there were no raccoons that I could actually see noticeably present in the coronation service. But there we are. That's par for the course, really. Perhaps the hats that the guards wore, the bearskins, which they had to obviously keep positioned on their heads, could have actually reflected that as well. So well done. To Sarah Huntley, to Kathy Manso, to Natasha Wanton and Richard Fitzwilliams, our little bonus guest there, because we honestly thought Richard would be lying down in a darkened room for this whole sort of experience, but he made it. He sent an email saying, you know, kind of talk about the whole thing, and indeed, we at least got a mention in for Penny Mordaunt and her mighty sword-wielding arm, which is very important and very Marvel-esque in many ways, Natasha. I'm sure that Jane Foster's Thor would have actually echoed her inner Penny Mordaunt line just for that, indeed.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to have a go, but they look really heavy, so I probably would be terrible at it. So good honour for having a go.
Yeah.